People are working on getting people to work.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Glad you're with us for the morning open. It's a look at the broader economy. As stock trading gets underway today, we're going to ask that question, where's Wall Street? Well, there it is. The S&P up about 2/3%. The NASDAQ up about 0.8%. The Dow higher now by 50 points at 10,502. European shares are up an average of 0.5% right now, and Asian shares closed up today as well. The Nikkei surged almost 4% thanks to a weakening yen. The Labor Department says first-time jobless claims last week dropped by 5,000 to the lowest level in more than a year. We're going to get some analysis of that and other economic barometers that we're watching this morning. Chris Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial. He's with us live from New York. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Seems like the jobless claims report is part of an encouraging trend. I mean, are we continuing down this road of less bad?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, the claims are some of the best news that we've got. This is a live measure, essentially, of the rate of layoffs and a very significant drop here since the end of March.
So, yeah, I mean, we were talking about a lot more than we are today. I mean, we also learned that worker productivity grew in the third quarter, but at a slower pace than expected. So companies seem to be doing more, Chris, with less. How much longer can they squeeze before they start hiring again?
Well, not as long as they did after the last recession, and that's primarily because this recession was so deep and so long that companies have been focused on cost-cutting for a year and a half now. That means there's just not as much room to cut from here.
And we've got this job summit today at the White House. Economists and business leaders, union officials, they're all there among those who will share ideas for tackling the unemployment problem. How much of this is the administration saying, hey, we're doing something about this, and how much is substance here?
Well, I think it is primarily that they want the world to know they're paying attention. But for now, that might be enough. The job situation is turning around. The White House doesn't want to make the deficit look any bigger. So it's going to be really difficult, I think, to do anything material about the job situation.
Yeah, I was reading this Wall Street Journal article this morning, saw the former Fed Vice Chair Alan Blinder. He's going to be at that summit today in D.C. And he's advocating a $60 billion jobs program, one that hires people to clean up infrastructure and build roads. I mean, if we're throwing money at banks trying to get, you know, credit going again, why not throw money at people to get them back to work?
Well, and one way to do that might be to use some of the cash that banks are paying back. Bank of America announced today it will be repaying its TARP loan. Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan already have. And then the other possibility would be to shift some of the stimulus money that's already been allocated but not spent. I don't think either one of those are bad ideas, and that might be the way to do something without making the deficit bigger.
All right, Chris, the other big event happening in D.C. is Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke on the Hill as the Senate Banking Committee in just a few minutes starts his reconfirmation hearing, and he'll likely be sitting in the hot seat there. Here's Marketplace Washington correspondent John Dimsdale.
Even Ben Bernanke's many defenders in the Senate say they have some tough questions. Why did he lend banks so much interest-free money? Why did he bail out insurance giant AIG?
Congress is very concerned about the Fed when there are problems. Most of the time, they don't give a damn.
Alan Meltzer has written a history of the Fed that comes out next month.
Now there's unhappiness, partly based upon errors that the Fed made and partly based upon just public complaints about the fact that things are not working the way the public would like them to work.
Despite the anger, most Fed watchers, like Meltzer and like Columbia Business School's Frederick Mishkin, expect Bernanke to be reconfirmed.
I'd rather have somebody who goes out there, really makes the tough decisions. If you instead do what actually was done during the 1930s when the Federal Reserve did nothing, we ended up with a depression.
Ben Bernanke's current chairmanship expires at the end of January. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
So Chris Lowe, Bernanke gets the nod again, yes or no?
Absolutely. He will be approved, but it's going to be a tough day for him.
Chris Lowe, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate it. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, December 3rd, 2009 at marketplace.org. The protests and marches today are marking the 25th anniversary of one of the worst industrial disasters ever to take place. A gas leak at the Union Carbide plant in Bhopal, India, killed thousands of people, and the effects are still being felt there. We're going to bring in Mehul Srivastava, a reporter at Businessweek based in Delhi. Hi, Mehul.
Hello.
What exactly happened?
Well, in December 1984, sometime around midnight, a Union Carbide plant released about 40 metric tons of this chemical called methyl isocyanate. It's poisonous. By the morning, about 4,000 people were dead. In the 15, 20 years after that, another 20 or 30,000 people have died. It's not exactly clear what the estimates are. And the government says about 500,000 survivors are affected. The problem, of course, is that it's not quite clear what caused the leak. Union Carbide said it was a disgruntled employee. The Indian government said it was lax safety standards.
And many protesters, Mehul, say that that gas is still there, that it's still a dangerous area. What's the situation right now?
I mean, almost every environmental group that's ever tested the ground over there says the groundwater, the soil, the buildings, they're all contaminated. So what's resulted is that people who still live in these areas, they still, 25 years down the line, there's children born with birth defects. There's women with reproductive disorders. There's cancers.
So legally, I mean, who's responsible? Is there anything else that can be done?
You've entered the contentious part of the issue here. Dow Chemicals bought out Union Carbide about 9 or 10 years ago. And Union Carbide had paid $470 million in 1989 to the Indian government. As far as Dow Chemicals is concerned, that's that. Everything was settled. But with the amount of people who were killed, that's not a lot of money. And then the government has never actually done a cleanup. The private sector has never done a cleanup. So we have about a quarter of the people in the city of Bhopal in central India who live in an area that's essentially a chemical dump.
And the future, I mean, how do they move on from here?
You know, I've visited Bhopal, and I can tell you that it's a pretty tragic situation. These people are caught between this nexus of government and foreign investment and a powerful multinational company and complicated laws. So it's highly unlikely that 25 years down the line anything's going to change when the 10th year anniversary or the 20th anniversary didn't change anything either.
All right. Mehul Srivastava is a reporter at Businessweek based in Delhi. Mehul, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Retailers today reported sluggish sales results for November. One thing we do know, though, online shopping is up this year. Seems like online retail would be an easy thing to get into. But small startups doing this for the first time say it's anything but. From the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, here's Mitchell Hartman.
Allison Dorst launched pinksandgreens.com, an online women's golf store, back in May. It was the dark days of spring.
There's definitely a hesitation of the economy and being in the golf retail industry, which is luxury goods.
So far, though, sales have been strong, and she expects to make a profit next year. But the marketing is expensive. Dorst spends thousands a month to make sure her business comes up in web searches. Riva Lozansky writes the blog smallbizdaily.com.
The hardest part right now about being a new startup online retailer is cutting through the clutter. There's so much competition, so how are you going to let people know you exist?
Social networks are a good start. Dorst has 1,400 people on her company's Facebook page.
It's great because the women can banter back and forth about what's a good club, what's a good shoe.
But she needs men, too, to buy golf gifts for their wives.
Because it's been all women buying stuff for themselves.
Teaching men to shop for women online. There's a marketing challenge for the 21st century. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Like many cities, Pittsburgh faces a multi-million-dollar budget deficit. Mayor Luke Ravenstahl thinks he's found a good way to help erase it. A first-of-its-kind tax on the tuition students pay to attend many of the colleges and universities within the city limits. From station WDUQ, Mark Neutbar has more.
As soon as the mayor introduced the tax, a firefight began, with Pittsburgh Council on Higher Education President Mary Hines calling it a poor choice.
The principle underneath the decision to tax students is a principle that we believe is incorrect, unjust, especially for the rationales that they provided in saying that the students should be taxed.
Enough votes have been gathered on the Pittsburgh City Council to pass the tax, including the vote of Councilwoman Tanya Payne, who says city taxpayers are already overburdened.
I would rather have a tax the students pay than taxing some 70-year-old couple.
Mayor Ravenstahl calls it the fair share tax, saying the students are using millions of dollars in city services every time they go out drinking and are not adding enough to the city coffers. In Pittsburgh, I'm Mark Newbar for Marketplace.
It's official now. Comcast, the nation's largest cable company, will pay just under $14 billion for a majority share of NBC Universal. Now, Comcast will share ownership of NBC Universal with GE. We're going to talk with Marketplace's Amy Scott, who's with us live from our bureau in New York. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
So what does the deal give Comcast?
Well, it gives Comcast the NBC network, several cable channels like USA and the Weather Channel, as well as a major film studio. I talked this morning with Porter Bibb with MediaTek Capital Partners. He says the deal instantly makes Comcast the world's largest media conglomerate, a huge player in both media content and distribution.
They are now the first and only totally vertically integrated media company. They have cable, they have broadcast over the air with NBC. They have wireless and they have broadband on the internet.
So, Amy, is there anything they won't have?
Well, Bibb says they won't have any print.
There you go. I assume there'll be some legal hurdles to clear for this deal to go through, right?
Consumer advocates are raising some objections already. They say the merger would stifle competition and innovation in the video market and could trigger a wave of media mergers. Analysts are saying, though, that the deal will probably go through, but Comcast may have to agree to some restrictions.
All right. Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Amy Scott with us this morning. Amy, thanks.
You're welcome.
And finally, there's a concert next week where they'll be a little more forgiving about having your cell phone on. A class at the University of Michigan's been teaching students how to make iPhones into musical instruments. Applications produce sounds from the touchpad or by blowing into the microphone, even shaking the phone. The Mobile Phone Ensemble performs December 9th. And if somebody calls in the middle of it, well, all the better. Check us out online at marketplace.org. Share your thoughts with us at our website. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.